Welcome, everybody, to WFHR's Playmakers. For this November 7th, 2022, got your host, James J. Mailoff, here. I am joined by my partner in sports, Mr. Randy Paul.
Morning, James.
Morning, Randy. Good to see you. Thanks for being here. Want to send a big shout-out and good morning to our friends at Quality Plus Printing, getting your words out. Our sponsor, we greatly appreciate our friends at Quality Plus. We've got a bunch to get to today. We want to get to whatever you want us to get to, though. It's your show, everybody. Call up 424-2600. Let us know your sports thoughts and feelings. I can't imagine what you'd be having to talk about today at Wisconsin. I mean, there's only a billion things we could be discussing and talking about, Randy.
That's for sure.
I would like to actually kick things off, though, rewinding a little bit and getting into a little baseball conversation. Of course, by now everybody has heard and has seen that the Houston Astros won the World Series. I did see some interesting stats come out of it, though, that I don't know if it was as common as that. I saw something really interesting happening with this World Series. There was a lot of people rooting for Philly. I saw a lot of people rooting against Houston, in part because of the years of the cheating scandal and that kind of stuff. But what I heard, I think overwhelmingly, like the majority of people, well, if Houston wins, at least Dusty Baker wins.
Wasn't that cool at the end how they all just kind of mobbed him and they were jumping up and down on him? That was awesome.
Honestly, I don't care who the team was. If he was managing them and he had won a World Series, I'd have been cool with it. Like, I guess the Cardinals will maybe be the biggest rival I can think of in baseball. I don't really have a lot of teams I dislike, but the Cardinals would probably fit the bill. Even if he was coaching the Cardinals, managing the Cardinals, I would have been excited for them to win just because of Dusty Baker. I'm a fan of his, but boy, there's some interesting things that Dusty did by winning this. In 1977, Dusty Baker wins the NLCS MVP. In 2022, Dusty Baker wins the World Series as the manager. Baker is the only individual to win both a postseason MVP award and a World Series as a manager in his career. Only person to ever do it. Only time it's been done in MLB history. The oldest sport we have, and it's the first time this has ever happened. A shout out to Sarah Langs, with Langs on Sports, who does, if you like stats, if you like weird stats, Sarah's got them all. She's incredible in the business and very good at what she does. How cool is that?
Yeah, did you hear the one also about where, like, 2 years ago, he had an opportunity to manage the Phillies?
Yes.
And then he didn't get the job, and his son says to him, "Don't worry, that must not have been the job that you were supposed to get."
Yeah. One thing that I did hear about Houston, because we're afraid to do this because of the cheating scandal and everything, but I think you got to kind of get over that. It happened. They got the people out of there. And we know that the players didn't really have a lot of accountability. Let's move on. I don't think that we take cheating lightly by any means, but I also think you got to know the sport. There's been cheating in baseball since the first ball was thrown. It's kind of always been a part of the sport. Keeping an eye on these things and keeping the game as fair as possible is what we all want. But that being said, I don't know how you can argue with the way outside of that whole thing. That is not anything like I'm pushing, just brushing to the side like it's nothing. The cheating scandal was horrible and everything. But for one, if you think they were the only ones doing this that year, boy, I got a bridge I'd love to sell you from San Francisco. It's a really nice bridge. but also, you almost can't not give them credit for the way they run that franchise. They lose big name, boom, gone. They just another kid up. You lose a guy like Carlos Correa at shortstop, one of the most vital, important positions in all of sports, especially if you were a defensive-minded team. They get this kid in there who is fine. He's great. He's been working out really good. They don't rebuild. They reload in Houston. That's impressive in today's MLB. It reminds me very much of the Oakland Athletics and that kind of thing.
It's kind of interesting, too, the Jeremy Peña, the shortstop, he wins the MVP as a rookie. Yeah. He also had a hit in all six games, which was six straight games.
I didn't know that.
That's never happened, they said, before. Of course, you got to take that with a grain of salt because not every game goes to six or seven games either.
Yeah.
But still, he's the only rookie to ever do that, so that was kind of interesting as well. He went 2-for-4 in game six. He was 10-for-25 with a home run in the World Series, so he batted .400, so well-deserving. Yeah. And as a rookie, he just looked very composed, like he'd been there before, and it was kind of fun to watch him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I enjoyed that part of it. I don't know. I still, even though it wasn't anybody that I had that I was rooting for one way or the other, I still found myself compelled to at least catch a little bit of the World Series whenever the games were on. I caught a little bit of every game. You know, I didn't get to catch, I don't think I really watched a whole game of any of them. But I didn't just wait for the highlights and stuff. I did catch some of the games, and I'm so glad I did, because even though Philly didn't win, that game two is one of the most exciting baseball games I've ever seen in my life. Like, just, it was so cool to me to see Harper go up there and do what we've been waiting for. We've all wanted to see Bryce Harper in this moment since he was a kid on the Sports Illustrated cover. So that was kind of full circle and kind of cool to see, even though I know he did not win. But it was Harper going to like calling over the kid in the on batter's box and like talking to him and sharing stuff with him. And I love the idea of like years later, long after retired, and he's in his Hall of Fame speech and he's talking about this moment. And he's like, actually, I didn't really give him any tips. I forgot to tell him something, and I needed to tell him something there. Like, it had nothing to do with the game. Because we make so much of that as watchers and everything. Oh, what did he tell him? What is McCullers giving away and all this stuff? It got me going down a rabbit hole, Randy, of this. And that game inside a game of baseball that I love so much. I think the game inside a game is what makes me, one of the biggest things that draws me to baseball is all those little things, that plus and minuses and checks and balances and everything. And it's in this day and age, in 2022, where everybody in the dugout's got a laptop. There's so many things that have advanced about the sport. This is still a huge player in the game. It's what you observe. I heard a couple of longtime pitchers like Pedro Martinez and a couple of guys talking about this. And I think it was Martinez that said how he got rocked his first couple of times up there. The second time he would face a team. And, you know, of course, you got to go back to the office, figure things out. All it was, he was giving away his fastball because when he would do that, he had his mitt in a certain spot.
Really?
Every time. And the batters knew this. It was 3 inches difference from where he would normally have it to where he had it. And they saw that and just jumped on it.
Wow.
What is the other story that I heard? It was Verlander told one that was really... Oral Hershiser. Maybe one of the best stories I've heard of baseball-wise. Oral Hershiser, when he would give his curveball, his ring finger would kind of stick out a little bit. He put it on the outside of his mitt when he would do this. And, you know, pitchers started to notice, our batters started to notice this and everything. So Oral Hershiser went to Rawlings or Spalding, whoever it was that made his glove, and said, hey, could you guys make like a little piece of leather outside of the glove? And now if you look at gloves, they've all got that now. Like, that's all from Oral Hershiser. That's just from that. Like, just because he was giving away pitches. It's fascinating to me that part of the sport.
Yeah, listening to Verlander talk after the win, you know, that he picked up the other night, too. That was interesting to watch I think that was game five that he pitched and got the W, too. He was, you know, so excited. The adjustments he had to make, too, because he said the batters, you know, they had it all figured out on game four. And then in game five, they did a 180. They figured they had them with a high fastball, and they just did a 180. So he said he had to adjust and made those adjustments. So you're right, that game within a game. It's always interesting to see them in the dugout as well, you know, with those laptops. You know, as before, you know, they'd have to talk about it. That was the only way they were able to communicate what the pitcher was throwing, what they could look for. Now they've got, with all of the technology, it's just fun to watch them be able to do those things as well. And like you, I only watched bits and pieces of the game, but we were seeing parts of it on Thursday night, and that catch made us all just kind of go, whoa! You know, really loud.
Yes,
just one of those that just grabbed you when Chaz McCormick went up against the wall and he climbed and he goes up and he catches it and he comes crashing off the wall. Mm-hmm. And then I think, didn't they make like some kind of picture, an imprint of this as he's laying on the ground? It looks like he's making snow angels or something.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. for a World Series that didn't maybe have one of our local teams or something like that, had some great moments in it. It was pretty fun. And I want to pivot from that to Brewers and talk a little bit about that. For anybody that had not heard, President of Operations David Stearns has stepped down from that position. He is still with the organization, being an advisory role, which I think is a really good, a key part of this. I don't think that Stearns is one of those guys where, okay, get rid of him, get him out of the organization. There's plenty of things to pick and choose from about what you like, what you didn't like that he's done. I don't think he's done a bad enough job to where, oh, get him out of the organization. In fact, you know, pick up his belongings and get him right on the outside border of Wisconsin and don't even let him, like, back in the state or something. I think the guy did a pretty good job, all things considered. But the... It's interesting to me how honest the front office has been about the reasoning for this. In part, it's because it was time. They think they need to change and that kind of stuff. But they really underestimated how heavy how hard it would hit the locker room, the Josh Hader trade. Nobody understands athletics and that it's a business more than these players, than the people in the organization, the people that are actually doing it. We talk about that stuff all the time, and we like to say we understand that, but these guys know it better than anybody. They know it's a business. They know that, okay, our team, even if we win the division, we're probably not going to do much damage. The team is looking at next year. Josh Hader has made it very clear he's not going to re-sign with us. He's in last year. So let's get what we can. That's business. That's 101. That's sports. It's since the dawn of free agency, that's sports. But it's one thing to lose the locker room for a coach. It's so much more devastating if it's a GM and an ownership that loses the locker room. And that is apparently what we're hearing more and more of what happened in the Milwaukee dugout as guys left. And now they're you know, cutting ties with a number of people. I saw that Andrew McCutchen is not going to be brought back. Jace Peterson is not going to be brought back. Nothing too huge of losses, but, you know, heads are rolling. Another interesting thing that came up this weekend, Brewers chairman and principal owner Mark Antanasio covered a variety of topics via special Q&A with some sports announcers, journalists, and some fans. And he made it very clear we might be more active this winter, that we might be more active than people are expecting us to be. So in football right now, there's a blueprint that everybody is trying to do. Football is so parody. You know, they saw what Seattle was able to do with that Russell Wilson contract when he was under the rookie contract. Okay, we're gonna pile up on defense and special player positions. You know, wide receiver, running back, tight end, that kind of thing. And while we've got Russ on this rookie deal, we're gonna hit on that, and that's our Super Bowl window. Once we got to give him the money, then that changes. I think you're seeing a similar thing in baseball where we got an amazing pitching staff. Like, we got no bats, or vice versa. We got bats, but we don't have a pitching staff. We got to win now. Also, people seeing teams be able to even make it to the World Series or win the whole thing without, like, being the Dodgers or the Yankees. Like, you know, when's the last time the most dominant team won the World Series? You know, I mean, maybe the Dodgers when they won a little bit ago, but ask the Dodgers how they feel about that. It doesn't feel, if it feels like it happened 20 years ago to Dodger fans. I can see where he's coming from in this moment. I also, when you're a small market team, you almost can't afford to rebuild completely. You know, you've got to, in baseball especially, you've got to be able to bring the fans in. And there's no market anymore that you can guarantee, oh, whatever we put out on the field, our fans are going to show up. Like, no market can guarantee that anymore. So I'm not too surprised by this, but I think that it's not something we expected either, though.
You know, I was reading an article about what's going to happen. They've, you know, predicting for the future for the Brewers, and this person said, I cannot see in 2025, which is right around the corner, either Corbin Burns or Woodruff being a starting pitcher for the Brewers. It'll be Peralta, it'll be Aaron Ashby, and so on. Do you think people are looking at what happened with the signing of Aaron Rodgers with the Packers for 3 years for $150 million and saying, you know, if we put all of our money into one or two people, like the starting quarter or starting pitching, we aren't going to be able to build around them. Of course, right now, the Brewers, even though they only finished one game out of the playoffs, batting-wise, they really struggled this last year. So you're going to have to bring in some bats if you want to do that and if you want to keep your pitching. There's only so much money to go around, right?
Yeah.
You know? So it's a real struggle.
And it tells you something, even in a non-cap sport, you have to worry about that. I think it's a really good point to bring up because we're seeing more and more, especially in baseball, the huge contracts don't work out. The Mets are still playing Bobby Bonilla. The Miggy Cabrera contract that he signed a couple of years back and everything. Baseball is littered with them, with horrible contracts. In fact, I think you can make the argument baseball has more bad contracts or bad money spent than any other sport by far and away, in part because of the cap thing. You're going to see it happen this offseason. Juan Soto is going to sign a $400 million deal somewhere, probably. There's no way you can get your money's worth out of that.
Yeah.
Like they did this with Bryce Harper because of the owner of the Phillies when they got into the World Series said, you know, I signed his kid to $300-some million, and I think I got him cheap. I think I got him on the low, that kind of thing. It was a funny joke, and anybody that has ever been in that moment will tell you this is what it's about. We want to win a World Series. Forget the cost. I don't care about the cost. Sean McVay last year saying, that, you know, forget about those draft picks. I don't care. We got a Super Bowl ring. Like, they're caring about them now, but they didn't care about it at the time. I wonder how that's going to go, balancing that going forward. Because when's the last time we were able to say, oh, they got a deal there? Is it going to be Patrick Mahomes? Is that maybe going to be it? I mean, I don't know. And even if it is, we're talking one out of, you know, 20, 30 times where this has worked out, where it's also kind of hard to let this guy go.
And then you look at the other side, and you look at a Za'Darius Smith who played like 18 plays last year for us. You can't keep him because his back surgery, how mm-hmm. did that turn out? He sure didn't recover very well. And now, as of going until yesterday, he was leading the league in sacks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's there's no exact science, that's for sure. No. Let's take a call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. You covered most of the things I want to talk about, brother. I totally appreciate Dusty Baker being able to win at 73 years old, win it all at 73 years old.
Yeah.
So I'm 78, so he's just a little bit younger than I am.
Yeah.
And you covered the haters trade and all that. I do think that the Brewers need a quality catcher. They're going to lose Navarez this year, so they need a quality catcher. One that can hit also.
Yeah, like to see them address that. I think that it's one of the most underrated positions in baseball. It may be the most underrated position in baseball is the catcher.
Yeah.
And they're not making a whole lot of great ones anymore. So, you know, finding one, especially in free agency, if you have to.
Yeah, one other thing my brother was telling me, there was 109 games left until official start of spring training.
Well, that gets us excited, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
and that's catchers and pitchers report about 8 or 9 days earlier than that, so it's probably only 100 days or something like that until start of spring training.
Gosh, winter's almost over. Thanks for the pep talk.
Yeah, I'm counting the days.
Me too.
I hear you.
All, December, when they had their meeting in December, I'll be watching all the stuff that comes out of there.
Oh, yeah.
Any trades, any signings and everything all year long.
Appreciate the call, sir. We'll talk more soon. You take care and have a great day.
Anything we can do to get rid of January and February, right?
Right. Just hibernate through this whole time.
Yeah, January and February, the 8 longest months of the year.
You brought up the Rodgers contract. I immediately thought of the Yelich contract and how that can be scary if you've signed somebody to a deal like that and it hasn't worked out. At the same time, Christian Yelich, when he was at the time that he signs that deal, is one of the most, you know, surefire contract signings in you know, you can ask for.
And Rodgers is two-time MVP.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So I mean, it's so easy to do the whole. Basically, to me, when these kind of conversations, most people, you know, where they stand right away. Like they already had this feeling, and nothing's going to change that. If they thought it was a bad deal, nothing Aaron or Christian Yelich is going to do is going to change that, and vice versa. It is difficult to balance, though, and I would not want that job. I would not want to be able to a vice president. We lost last week. McVay, you know, the grandfather of Sean McVay and everything, and one of the architects of those 49ers teams. And we've heard so many people coming out of the woodworks and talking about him and how, you know, Bill Walsh had these amazing ideas and Eddie DeBartolo had these fantastic ideas, but nothing happens. They don't win those 5 championships without that GM, without that guy who can make those dreams happen. I think the more of these contracts we see, the more of this stuff that happens, the more I appreciate the Theo Epstein's, the gentleman's name in Philly. This is like the third team he's gotten to the World Series or whatever. Like the ones that are really good at this, that really know how to do it. I'm not talking about the guy in Philly is a little different because he kind of goes somewhere and like burns scorched earth just to get to the World Series and then he moves on. I don't think that as much as I really respect these people that can, like I was talking about with Houston or the way the Oakland Athletics have been run for so long. You know who you are. You know what you're capable of. How can I put a winning team out there within my wheelhouse, the things that I have to offer that I can do?
Interesting, too. Caller talking a little bit about Brewers trying to get a quality catcher, right?
You know, yeah.
Those guys that are in the business of scouring and doing the scouting and then the GMs making sure that that all happens, too. But aren't you happy for, like, Martin Maldonado, former Brewer catcher, who actually started that rally that ended up winning that last game, gets hit? I know he gets taken out at second, but that was what opened up the door so that they were able to have Yordan Alvarez hit that 3-run homer in the sixth inning that put them up 3-1 and got added in one more run in the sixth, and they wouldn't end up winning it 4-1. So, Maldonado, just he looked pretty solid in that entire series.
If you like him a lot, might be able to re-sign him. He is a free agent. I just thought I'd take a look at the 2023 free agents at catcher. I see Yadier Molina in there, although he is probably retired,
right.
I believe.
I
thought so, yeah. Wilson Contreras, man, if you can, not only do you get to take him from a rival, but one of the best catchers in baseball, Wilson Contreras. Gary Sanchez, Minnesota. Like, he's had some down years, but, better than average. Roberto Perez, Martin Maldonado, Omar Vasquez, Vares from Milwaukee, of course, and Christian Vasquez from Houston. Houston losing a couple of both their catchers right now, it looks like. Mike Zuno out of Tampa Bay. So none of these names necessarily going to be like, oh, we have to have him. But there's options out there. There are some decent catchers out there this year in free agency.
It's not Johnny Bench and Carlton Fisk.
No.
Those days seem to be gone.
Glad you brought that up. One last note before we go to our first commercial break. And when we come back, we will get into local coverage. Randy's got a bunch of info for us there. We will, after that, talk some football, of course. Crazy weekend in college and NFL. The college football, Saturday that we just got out of. Imagine if you're a young person, like you're 13, 12, something like that, and you're just in your early years of enjoying the sport, and like that's what you got for a Saturday. Like, boy, was that an amazing Saturday. A crazy one.
My cousin lives in a suburb of South Bend, so he was at the Notre Dame-Clemson game. So he's texting me during the game, and there were like 3-4 games that are going on besides the World Series at the time that I'm flipping. I'm like, I need more TVs.
Right? Yes. Yeah. It didn't help anything either that the noon, for Sunday, NFL Sunday, they only had 2 games in the 3 o'clock spot. So the noon hour was booked. Like, whether your team was playing or not, it was booked. It was crazy.
And then the Jets beat Buffalo. I think that's a thanks to the Packers. I think they kind of showed people, how you can beat the Bills.
Very weird weekend for upsets, not just in college, but in the pros as well. We'll get to that. But before we do, I do want to mention this as to lead to our football talk a little bit later coming out of our baseball talk. This was an interesting stat that came out. The last time the Packers won a game, the Milwaukee Brewers had won a game more recently. Going back to October, when the Brewers beat the Arizona Diamondbacks 3-0, the Packers beat New England 27-24 in overtime on October 2nd.
Interesting. They both won by 3.
Right? It's crazy. It's just a weird stat. That's weird.
Wow, it is.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and have some more fun. Thanks to our friends over at Quality Plus Printing, getting your words out here at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody, to Playmakers, brought to you right here on WFHR by our friends at Quality Plus Printing, getting your words out. Randy Paul, my partner in sports here, and Randy does a fantastic job covering so much of our local area. What do you got for us, Randy?
Well, we had a couple of state championship things take place this last weekend. In girls volleyball, the state championships were held at the Rec Center in Green Bay. Division 1, second seed Divine Savior Holy Angels defeated top seed Oconomowoc in 5 sets. The final set ended 15-13. You talk about a way to win and lose, right?
Yeah.
D2, top seed Xavier stopped second seed Sauk Prairie in 4 sets. D3, Howard's Grove became just the third team to win at least 4 consecutive state championships and the first to do it in Division III as they swept St. Croix Falls. And in Division IV, McDonald Central Catholic defeats Monticello to win the championship for the fourth straight year. The boys' soccer tournament was held this Saturday at Eline Field down in Milwaukee. And oh my goodness, I don't know if you saw any of that, but it was blowing something fierce.
It was crazy.
I mean, when you were going into the wind, they would kick the ball, basically came back at you. I don't think I ever saw a goal into that wind. Everything was scored with the wind. It was nuts. Division I, second seeded Verona ends top seed Marquette's 2-year reign as Division I champions with a 2-1 victory. Division II, same scenario in this division as Oregon defeats Whitefish Bay after a 1-1 tie in regulation. They won it 8-7 in a shootout. Wow. Feel sorry for the young man.
I do. Yeah, that's rough.
D3 saw New Berlin Eisenhower shut out Green Bay Notre Dame 1-0. And in D4, top seed Cristo Rey Jesuit blanked defending champion Sheboygan Christian Lutheran 2-0. High school girls swimming and diving also took place in a D1 sectional meet at Hudson. Spash took top honors. Everest was second. Marshfield came in sixth. Three Dubs came in 10th. And Wisconsin Rapids was 12th. In the 100-meter diving for Lincoln, Fiona Gaugert was 4th. Lydia Zacher took 6th. And Emily Buchar finished in 10th place. Well, high school football action, they are now at level 3 as that wrapped up this last Friday night. Division 1 top-ranked Bayport held off Appleton North 17-10. And again, for some reason known only to computers, second-ranked Kimberly goes on the road and wins at Wanakee 31-16. D2, third-ranked West Appear, travels from one side of the state to the other to take on seventh-ranked River Falls. Makes no sense. And they clobbered them, 38-6. They'll face sixth-seeded Kaukauna, who also went on the road and hammered Homestead, 41-13. D3 saw West Salem slip past Green Bay Notre Dame, 21-14. In Division 4, sixth-ranked Freedom upsets third-ranked Little Chute, 13-7. And seventh-ranked Two Rivers clobbers ninth-ranked and top seed Racine St. Catharines, again on the road, 35-6. D5, top-ranked La Crosse Aquinas. Boy, they look tough as they doubled up the Hornets of Colby, 28-14. So nice year for the Hornets. Division 6, second-seeded Stratford. They had to go on the road also. They go take on Grantsburg. They were the top seed, and Stratford, no trouble, 27-7. And St. Mary Springs was ranked number 1, but seeded number 2. They beat Coleman, who was ranked number 2, but seeded number 1. I don't know, it's confusing.
Yeah.
21-20. Division 7, top-ranked Eau Claire Regis trampled Edgar. Boy, does Edgar ever get beat 53-8? Well, they just did by Regis. That is one good squad. Shiocton, right? The Cooses Conference, they shocked fifth-ranked Cambria Friesland 32-14. I guess it was no shock to us because we saw Shiocton play.
Right.
They looked pretty darn good.
Yeah, they did.
Second-ranked Cashton doubles down on Blackhawk Warren, the team that beat Assumption. They doubled them up 28-14. Peppa Ullman ranked number 4, and the top seed, they were upset by Bangor 40-21. And finally, an 8-player. The finals are set as number 1 Newman Catholic shut out Siren 35-0, and number 10 Belmont whipped Wabino Leona 44-18. So Newman and Belmont will meet for the state championship on Saturday at 1 p.m. right here in Wisconsin Rapids at Southwood County 2000 Stadium.
How nice is it that we get to host these things?
Yeah, isn't that fun?
That's pretty darn cool. Yeah. That is great for our area, too, economic-wise, but just kind of cool in general. Yeah. I like that. That's fun.
I got a feeling Newman's going to win it again this year. And how about the River King? Right?
Yes.
Yep. They, you know, Coach was in here last week talking a little bit about the Hudson Havoc, and they split with them on Friday and Saturday of this week. Lost 4-1, even though they outshot the Havoc 53-28 on Friday, and then they outshot them again on Saturday 49-19, but this time they picked up the 3-2 win. So they're back at home this Friday and Saturday. They'll be on our sister station, WIRI, that our pregame starts like a minute before the dropping of the puck.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, we'll have Mark Loebner and Don Chesbrough doing the usual fine job for us here.
Shout out to both of them.
Yep. So busy time. Things are starting to wrap up and wind up in high school football. Level 4 this week. State championships will be the following Thursday, the 17th through Saturday. Or Friday. And we're already looking at girls high school basketball. There's a possibility that next Thursday, the 17th, when the high school football playoffs start or the championships start, we might be doing a basketball game as well. So we'll have to keep you all updated on that.
Yeah, and we'll definitely keep in the loop on that, everybody. So we love to cover these teams and continue to. And I know that as soon as November rolls around, I immediately start thinking about like the Cranberry Classic and that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's an exciting time of year.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely try to get over there. I think it's Thursday of the Cranberry Classic that, if I remember correctly, Nakusa's playing against Assumption.
Okay, I believe very cool.
And I think Port might be in it as well. So there's a real good chance we'll might be doing a couple of games in
They do such a great job with that event. Yeah, it's so much fun.
It's probably Friday and Saturday. Maybe if I said Thursday, that's Thanksgiving. It would be Thursday. It would be Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. God, I'm just so excited to be talking more basketball.
We could be doing five or six games just before we get to December.
It's crazy. Isn't that nuts? That's really nuts. Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty well. How are you?
Oh, not doing too bad. Well, before you get into the what you call the Green Bay Packers talk, you were talking before about the technology in sports, and I guess this is probably one of the first years I've seen it because I've been able to watch more of the NHL because of them changing their contracts and they're on TNT and all that. It was funny watching it, that every time a guy come off the shift, what did he have in his hand? He had a tablet.
Yep.
And that's how fast they can get these shifts to these players.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
I knew things had gone that route when the first time this happened to me, and I'm looking at I think it was Patrick Kane comes off the ice, and he's one of those guys that is always talking to his guys and sharing stuff and everything, and he's got his head down, and I couldn't tell why. I was like, he had a great shift there. Why is he? Oh no, he's looking at a tablet. Like, oh okay, I didn't even notice this. Now it's all over the place. How quickly you're so right about that. How quickly they can get the technology to that tablet, but that even hockey players have gone this route now. Like, it's one thing in baseball when you see it. Hockey players doing it, that's a whole different thing.
And it's just amazing how much the hockey game has evolved, you know, just within the last, 5 years?
Oh, yeah.
I would have to say. I mean, I know it's been in the process of them probably, you know, getting it to that point, but it's just amazing how fast it's changed the popular, you know, them getting them on regular TV or getting them to the people easier now. I really have a feeling that NHL hockey is really going to just take off here soon.
With the new contract, I think that's only going to help with the contract with ESPN and all this, with that going forward. I think that was a huge game changer for them. In the last 15 years, they've really opened up the offense a lot more. But one of the biggest things that they did to save that sport and really help it, as much as I'm not a huge fan of this, I have to admit they were right, is getting the goons out of hockey and getting rid of more of the fighting, making that not as big of a thing as much of a... I grew up, that was a big part of hockey to me. That was hockey game. I went to a hockey game and I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out kind of thing, you know? They were right. They were right to get this out of the sport. It has opened it up more. It's so much faster. More people are watching. More people are entertained. And these guys are way too talented to be knocked out of the game just because of a bump and bruise or whatever. It's different. It's made the sport better.
I'm curious to get both of your opinions with both hockey and soccer. What do you think if they would eliminate offside?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I haven't figured out soccer offside ever, so that's not
possible.
Thing, you know,
no.
And yeah. I mean, you can't figure that one out. The only one I'm having a tough time trying to figure out is the icing.
And
hockey, but you know, and it's so evolved, and like what the coach said last week on your show is how big and faster these guys are getting.
Yeah.
Well, think of the same thing in the NFL. How many Packers went out of the game yesterday? Like 7?
Yeah.
You're going to have 60-man rosters just to finish a game.
Yeah. I mean, it's just I think they're going to outgrow their equipment almost, the way they're going.
Yeah.
I was talking about bigger and stronger. Last year, we went to a River Kings game. They had a goalie that was 6'7".
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When he gets down his crouch, his shoulders are above the net. I mean,
yeah.
How in the world?
Said Ben Bishop for Tampa Bay, I want to say, was one of the first big ones I saw where he's like 6'7" and a half or whatever in the goal. Like, it's incredible. Anybody, did either of you guys catch the Georgia game, Georgia-Tennessee game?
A little bit.
I watched I watched a lot of it, and part because I couldn't take my eyes off of Darnell Washington. This kid is 6'7", weighs 2,000 pounds. He is a offensive lineman who can catch. That's what he is. Like, he is the new breed of tight ends going forward, where these kids, hey, wait a minute, I don't have to play basketball. I can play football. Like, the Jimmy Grahams and Antonio Gates and all these guys really, like, got that going, and now you're seeing more and more of these hybrid kids who could be a great center or power forward, but he decides to catch a football instead. You know, it's really incredible.
Seen his 40 speed was almost as fast as like a wide receiver too. If I remember correctly what they said, and it's amazing. And I mean, it all comes down to the technology. These people are, you know, they're getting into the weight rooms, they're getting into those clinics or whatever they do to, you know, make these people faster and stronger. And you want to sit back and look back in the days. If you want to go back into the early 80s, late 70s, and some of these Packer teams, Brewer teams, and, you know, when they were actually, you know, halfway decent.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we went through a good span here with the Packers, you know, from the 90s on, but in those earlier years, if they, you know, they had this technology back then, I mean, look what would have happened with Nitschke and Bart Starr, if they had all this stuff, you know, they could do it. How much they would have been able to be more efficient, you know, as a player.
Yeah. I actually have a question for both of you, and I was hoping you'd call up, man, and I appreciate that you did. Is this the end of that run? Is this the end of the Green Bay run? And I'm not talking about just Aaron's run here, but going back to like our caller here just said and everything. It isn't as if Green Bay had to reload or rebuild after Brett Favre. You know, you did a little bit here and there, but it was more reloading. You had the quarterback, you had that stuff set up. You knew what you were going to do as a team. Is this the end of that run? Is it that we're seeing here, or is it one of those situations where it's a long season and there's a lot of games yet to be played?
I don't know. I've told a lot of people this when I've talked to them. It's hard to watch because, yes, again, we're getting back to, it almost seems like the Packer teams of the 80s, the way they're kind of playing right now. Obviously, the injuries have a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. And I know they were talking, you know, last week, that, you know, listen to some of all the other talking heads on other sports stations that, you know, all the Packers screwed up by not going after somebody, but then you hear the rumors that they were going after Claypool, they're going after that tight end from Detroit. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't get the right deal done. There's more holes or more issues on that team than just one player.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I saw the article yesterday, or at least one of the references you might be referring to out of NFL.com. The Packers stood pat at the trade deadline, much to the chagrin of fans. However, it wasn't from a lack of trying. Sources have reported since then that they made a really strong run at Darren Waller, the all-pro tight end out of Las Vegas, that they were even going to, they even had a contract to give him an extension. That's how far along this process had gone, which is very far along in the process. If they're talking to his agent, and it's almost like, hey, where do you want to live in Green Bay? You know, we got some nice places in the Appleton area if you want to buy a house or something. That's where, how close it got. And you mentioned Chase Claypool. That's an interesting one, too, because the Bears didn't offer anything. Green Bay didn't. Pittsburgh just felt like, well, Chicago's going to have a higher draft pick, so we'll take Chicago's. Green Bay's a playoff team, so why would we take theirs? There's nothing, they didn't do anything wrong there. You could maybe make some arguments that they could have, that was all they pursued, apparently, that they could have, like, look, any good GM is going to have option A, B, C, D, E, F, G, going all the way down the line. Like, you know, I don't get this guy, who's my next guy? It's no different than when you're drafting. Your chances are you're not going to get your number one pick, so you got about 80 guys lined up here, 1 through 80, who I'm going to get here. You can make that argument maybe and everything, but I think what you said, the caller hit it on the head here. Say they get, let's say they get them both. Let's say they get Chase Claypool and Darren Waller. Holy cow, gave up a 2 and a 3. You know, you got no money to play with because you didn't have any money to play with this season. Do you think they're going to win a Super Bowl with that? Like, I mean, do you think it's those two guys that's going to change things that much? I don't know, but I have a hard time believing that that immediately makes them Super Bowl contenders. Like, I don't believe. No. Yeah. Last I checked, neither of those guys plays tackle. Neither of them are guards. And that is a bigger concern to me than the receiver position, as crazy as that may sound coming out of yesterday's game. But I'm more focused, like, guys are going to learn this position. Like, guys are going to be able to do that. You can't find offensive linemen on the street. Like, they're either good or they're not. Like, in this NFL that we have nowadays, the stats show you. Either these guys can hold their own or they can't. And you can make a lot of comments. There's plenty of people to blame with the way things are going on in Green Bay right now. From the top on down, there's not one person who can walk out of that locker room saying, well, I did my job, I'm good. Like, I did everything I needed to do. Like, there's nobody who can necessarily say that. That defense has been playing very good, especially with all the injuries. I'll take that defensive backfield over anybody, almost anybody's in football. Even with that being said, there's plenty of things they could still be doing as well that the defensive coaching staff could be doing, I think.
You know, the caller made a great point, too. There is not one position outside a quarterback, and even our quarterback's got a sore thumb, that isn't injured. We've got injuries at every position. How do you overcome 7 injuries in one game? And, you know, Dobbs, one of our supposedly top receivers, what did he last, one play?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's all it was. He just had that one play.
Yeah, you can't overcome 7 injuries per game. I mean, you can't fix that with 1 or 2 wide receivers. Even if we had Davante Adams, yeah, maybe we would have got 1 or 2 more wins because we might have got that win against Washington. We might have beat the Giants there at the end. We maybe would have beat Detroit, right? So we might have got 3 more wins. But over the long haul, I don't know. And they got such a tough schedule coming up right now. Don't they have Dallas? They've got the Eagles and Tennessee in the next 3 games. I mean, I don't know.
It's not looking good.
Yeah.
Here's my next thing, and we got to go to break here. But before we do, a little breaking news. Frank Wright is out as the coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Wright is out as head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Not no word if he was fired or if he quit. He was fired. He was fired. Come on. Especially Frank Wright. There's no way he's quitting that job. He's definitely getting. That is a big one. Now, that's a big down. I know the Colts have been struggling and everything, but everybody consensusly agrees that's a good coach. How are you feeling if you're Matt LaFleur? And I'm not saying that he's on the hot seat or anything like that, but it's not as if has anybody come out of the Matt LaFleur era so far and said, man, that kid knows what he's talking about. Boy, he knows what he's doing. Well, he did that play. He did this thing right here that makes me feel very confident about him as a coach. I'm asking rhetorically. I'm asking openly. I don't know. I don't pretend, even though I watch the Packers every week and everything, I'm not going to pretend to know that team inside and out like you guys would or something. If he's a good coach, if he's not, that is something that seems to be debated right now, which always happens when a team has a losing record. But if, you know, you're seeing these dominoes fall more and more in college and the pros, where it used to be when we were kids, guys, you got 4 or 5 years at least. At least 4 or 5 years. Now you got 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah,
like maybe 4 or 5 weeks.
Three straight 13-win seasons, and we've got this great coach. All of a sudden, you have a 5-game losing streak, and he's an idiot. You know?
Right. Yeah.
On that end, though, but if you listen to some of his pressers, you almost wonder if he's not, you know, he's in over his head a little bit.
Yeah.
He asks questions. Oh, I don't know. Well, as a coach, you don't sit there and say, I don't know. You kind of try to find a different way to say it. You know, if you don't know, you find a different way to say, I don't know.
Sometimes I think he wants to be liked too much, too, in the locker room. I don't mean with the fan base or with the journalists or anything like that. I mean with the locker room. He talks a good game about, well, we can't have this and not in my locker room and discipline matters. And then every single week you keep seeing knucklehead stuff happening on the field or off field or something. And you could say all the right things, but if we're seeing it on the field, you're not holding these players accountable. You're not.
And that's you saw that yesterday with Alexander, making that stupid play, that late hit out of bounds.
So ridiculous.
Or throwing, and the guy was out of bounds, and he threw him down. And then he was sitting in with the crowd trying to get the crowd to boo him even more.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that's I think, on that end, I think Alexander is showing his frustration on the locker room or on the what's going on, because that was, that's not him. You know that's not him.
And I got a lot of season left to play. We'll see how this goes. We'll revisit this when we're getting ready for the playoffs, and the Packers have got a playoff spot already lined up and everything, because I am not counting Aaron Rodgers out. Maybe it's just PTSD for me as a Bear fan or something, but I'm not counting him out. He could be retired for 5 years, and I'll still be looking over my shoulder. Is Aaron coming? Not him. Yeah. Not that one. Like, with Favre, it was a little different, because I could always hope for that wild, that gunslinger throw of Favre or something like that, where he'd throw a pick or something. Aaron, I know that he, Father Time is undefeated. I know that there's plenty of things you could say about his game that he needs to take responsibility for, as far as this losing streak and all that being said. No, not Aaron Rodgers. And as long as that number 12 is on that team, I am not counting them out. Nope. We'll take a break right here, but thank you so much for the call, sir.
All right, you guys have a great week.
You too.
You too. We'll take our final break right here. We'll come back and wrap up the show in the last 10 minutes right here on Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody, to Playmakers here at WFHR. We still got some time to take your phone calls if you want to call up and join the conversation. 424-2600. Bring us your sports thoughts and feelings. With this last handful of minutes, Randy, there's a couple of things we could touch on here. One of the things that I wanted to make sure to just get in there real quick. We don't have to necessarily dive too deep into it right now, but I do want to know how people are thinking or feeling, or if you even know, hey, everybody, the biggest sporting event in the world is coming up in just like weeks. It's like right around the corner. The World Cup.
Aren't those commercials awesome?
Extremely. Like, the commercials may be more entertaining than an actual soccer match might be in some ways, but... The FIFA World Cup is going to be in Qatar. That is coming up. It looks like the first match will be Sunday, November 20th at 10 a.m. We are going to have a point this season where both footballs are going on, American and soccer, and their biggest events. We've got the holidays, we've got basketball getting into gear and stuff, and hockey, of course, running game, college football getting really into like the real heat of things. It is a really crazy time sports-wise. So Playmakers is basically going to be a 24-hour show now. We're going to just turn that into a whole day show so we can cover everything. For the audience, a little look behind the curtain. Randy and I, every episode, we get done and we're like, wow, we got all that in. We're always blown away by what we got in and everything. I don't know if coming up in the next couple of weeks, if we're going to be able to feel that way.
Isn't that funny, though, that it's the 20th, I think, is when that first game is in Qatar. I think I saw one of the NFL pregame shows is going to be from Qatar next week.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Isn't it?
That's very crazy.
And it might be for the Packers and Cowboys.
I think you're right. I think it is. Yeah, they're going to be in a military base, I believe.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Tied into the whole military appreciation
cool,
that we have
right?
here. Very cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. very, very cool.
With Veterans Day being this Friday.
I like it. Yes, yeah. I like it. Any chance to talk our veterans and
you
talk
about it. Yep.
I'm just curious if anybody cares, if anybody is that interested in this or not. I mean, I'm sure that there is going to be, your diehard soccer fans and that are going to be caring about it. But it's one thing to care about it, and then, but American football is odd. And the funny thing about that is it doesn't necessarily have to be your team. It could be Atlanta and Jacksonville, and it's going to pull bigger numbers than some of these soccer games. A lot of people felt like baseball got the biggest break as far as winning the World Series wrapping up when it did, because they were going to go head-to-head with Sunday Night Football if that didn't happen. And they were scared to death, at least there's people reporting that they were scared to death that a World Series Game 7 would draw lower numbers than just a regular season Sunday Night Football game.
Because they're going against Patrick Mahomes and Derrick Henry,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that game went to overtime.
Which was a good game. Yeah. That was a good game yesterday. That was a good one. I marvel at Patrick Mahomes. I cannot tell you. He is the most watched TV athlete in sports to me.
And he's just a kid yet.
Just so young. It's incredible. It's not it's not as if sometimes when he's doing these things, it really like you look at him and he's the guy that can pull this off. I looked at Magic Johnson, and it didn't surprise me that he could do no-look passes. It didn't shock me. Magic looked like he was the kind of guy that could pull this off. Patrick Mahomes, even though he's cocky and he's got all that brass and everything like that, unlike Steph Curry, who is much more of a trash talker than I think people realize, Mahomes isn't so much that. And yeah, he flashes and all these things, but never have I looked at that kid and thought, oh, he's capable of anything. Oh, anything that kid could do. Like, there's certain guy. Cam Newton came out of college. I'm like, okay, that's a walking first down. That's like a first and short. You got your first down. The rest of the next 10 years, you've got that covered. Patrick Mahomes, I was excited about him in college, and I thought he could be a good NFL quarterback, but he never looked to me like some Adonis or anything. Like, it's still surprising to me, even though we've seen all these highlights and all these things this kid has done. I marvel not just at him, but at Andy Reid. And Andy Reid being one of the more veteran coaches in football, and him having the brass and the insight to feel, this kid's got some skills that not everybody's got. I'm not going to make him do what Donovan McNabb did. I'm going to make him do what Patrick Mahomes should. I'm not even going to make him do what Alex Smith did. I'm going to redesign my playbook around his skill set. I wonder if Matt LaFleur did that with Aaron Rodgers. I wonder if more coaches are doing that, or if there's still that old way of things, my way or the highway kind of thing. I'm not sure. I'm not saying I know one way or the other. I am curious to know. I would like to know the answers to those things, because it seems like that's the right way to do it.
I'm trying to remember back in the first year they were going through the playbook, and they made some tweaks the second year, and he and Rodgers sat down and kind of tweaked things. So they might have done that the second year from what I remember. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, boy, they make great commercials.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yes, they do.
Don't you love the one where he throws the pen and he goes, I'm going to get to the bottom of this?
Randy, I've been studying acting since I was 7 years old. I know that craft better than anything. Maybe in the world do I feel more confident talking about acting than anything else, any other subject. I've watched that commercial a billion times. I can't figure out if Andy Reid is one of the greatest comedic actors of our generation, or if he just doesn't know a commercial's going on.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he knows that the cameras were filming him. It's too darn good. Did you see Sunday Night Football? Before my class started yesterday, I was watching a little of it. There was a guy standing back, dressed up as Andy Reid, who even had the surprise looked out. He even had, oh, I can get to the bottom of this. God, I love that commercial. Yeah, it's too funny. Too good. Randy, thank you so much for joining us. Really had a great time hanging out with you, as always. Thank you for all the work you do off scene and everything. And not only that, but covering these sports. Great college, high school football season. Thank you for all the coverage you made.
Level 4 this week. Should be fun.
Take a breath, because basketball's right around the corner.
My goodness.
And you have a great week, Randy. We'll talk soon. And we'll keep you up to date on all of our sports coverage as we go along here, what we got coming up. Big shout out to Quality Plus Printing, getting your words out. Thanks for sponsoring. Thanks to all the calls. Meet you back here next Monday for more Playmakers at WFHR.